Testing.
morning. Welcome. Good morning. Is this the placement unit and CPC? Welcome. You get to sit in the front row. And probably maybe front two, I guess. So how many of you have been to a commission meeting before? Nobody? One? Okay, so you have the general gist. The president will kind of get things started. They approve a couple things. It takes minutes. Then Trent will normally do an overview of what's going on at the federal, state, local levels, but he's not here today, so you will also need to be doing it for him. And then it's your turn. Basically what I sent in the email, I'll read that, and then most likely Noelle, maybe Joan will say something, and then we'll start calling out names, and we'll give you a certificate, and then we have one bigger pump for everybody. And then you can leave after, most people do, and hopefully you will be accosted at the door by our photographer, and he'll take a picture for our poster. Short agenda. You're it.
Good. I guess we'll
stay awake. I thought it was going to be canceled. Honestly, last time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's going to be here. And then that was the other weird thing about this year. But we're here.
Thank you.
introduce everybody from the group that's being honored? Well, in advance, I want to thank you all. And too many people to mention by name, but it is in the minutes, and it is in the record, and I just simply wanted to say thank you. Okay?
Good morning. I'd like to call our November 21st commission meeting to order. And I see all members of the commission are present. And I'd like to ask for adoption of our agenda. All in favor? So moved. And can I ask for an adoption of our October 31st special meeting minutes? Are there any changes that anyone would like to make? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. And calling on Noelle Simmons, our acting executive director.
Good morning, commissioners. Nice to see you all again.
Can't hear you.
Is that on?
Kidding.
Okay, good. So I will start with a few federal updates, beginning with the Families First Prevention Services Act. This is something that we've been updating you on regularly. Again, this is the act that allows for the expenditure of federal foster care funds on prevention services, as opposed to having to spend them only after a child has entered foster care. We reported to you a couple of months ago that there had been a bipartisan congressional agreement to make some provisions that would ease the transition for states and counties like San Francisco, who had been operating under the Title IV E waiver, which sunsetted in October. I am updating you today to let you know that that bipartisan agreement has actually been introduced as a bill in Congress, the Family First Transition Act, and it will really do two key things that will be helpful to us and other waiver jurisdictions. The first is that it provides some transition funding over a couple of years that will kind of smooth the transition from the waiver funding model to the new funding model under Families First. So we will be getting more of an ease ramp down in the funding and about $750,000 in one-time flexible funding to help reduce any adverse fiscal effects due to the transition out of the waiver and startup costs for Families First. The second thing that the new act does is it extends the timeline over which states and counties have to begin providing prevention services that are evidence-based, which is one of the requirements under the Families First Act. Of course, it's a good thing to have evidence-based services, but this provides a couple of years for a little bit of additional planning and ramp up to get those services in place. So those were both welcome changes. I also want to update you briefly on the CalFresh ABOD waiver. ABODs are able-bodied adults without dependents. And as you will recall, about a year and a half ago, San Francisco had to reinstitute a work requirement on able-bodied CalFresh recipients in order to retain their nutrition benefit. In that first year and a half of implementation, we have been able to use what are called exemptions in order to keep CalFresh ABODs on aid even if they're not meeting the work requirement. And that's because the state of California had accrued a bank of these exemptions so that we could continue working to engage people in employment services and in work. There is a pending federal rule change that we are expecting to be finalized next month. We don't know what that's going to do yet, but what we are hearing is that in all likelihood, the federal government is going to sweep those exemptions from California and other states that have them, which means that really there would be an imperative for able-bodied adults to work, or they would lose CalFresh benefits after 3 months. So that is a policy change that we submitted comments in opposition to, as did CWDA, but it's not looking like that's going to go our way. And of course, what that would mean is that we would be likely to see attrition off of our CalFresh caseload as a result in 2020. That is still pending, but we should have an update for you in December or January about the outcome on that. And then finally, at the federal level, Congress has not yet authorized a spending plan for the new fiscal year that started on October 1st. They are operating under what is called a continuing resolution, which they just extended to December 20th. And so that date is a little tricky because, of course, that's when we expect some of the impeachment proceedings to be wrapping up. And so there's a little bit of uncertainty about what that might mean for extending the budget authorization beyond December 20th. And we certainly hope we won't see a repeat of the government shutdown that we saw last year. So we'll be paying attention to what's happening in D.C. around the budget. Moving on to the state level, we're in a little bit of a quiet period in Sacramento. It's the gap between legislative sessions. So bills from the last session have been signed or vetoed by the governor. Advocates and legislators are beginning to develop their advocacy priorities and bills to be introduced in the new session in January. CWDA is also going through the process of developing its advocacy agenda for next year. And the board of directors will be voting on their budget and policy priorities at their December meeting. So we'll be able to update you on that at our next meeting as well. Moving on to the local level policy happenings, I guess the big news this month was that Mayor Breed and the Board of Supervisors arrived at a consensus plan about how to try to reform the mental health system in San Francisco. It had looked for a minute as though there might be two competing legislative proposals on the ballot next year, one from the mayor and one from the board, but those were pulled back and a consensus plan was put forward. The plan is called Mental Health SF, and it really seeks to provide access to mental health services, substance abuse treatment, and psychiatric meds to any resident of San Francisco who has a behavioral health issue and is homeless, uninsured, or enrolled in one of the two safety net health coverage programs, Medi-Cal and Healthy San Francisco. The Board of Supervisors had wanted to go for universal access to mental health services, even for those with private insurance. So the compromise plan adopts the mayor's focus on a more low-income population. The compromise was that the new plan also establishes an Office of Private Health Insurance Accountability, which will be a city office that will advocate on behalf of privately insured individuals who are not receiving timely mental health care services under their private plan. The plan is subject to funding availability, and so I expect that this will continue to be discussed through next year's budget process. Moving on to agency news, also in the press this month, you may have heard a little bit about the expansion of our diaper bank here in San Francisco. In partnership with Help a Mother Out, we have operated a diaper bank that gives free diapers to low-income families with children under the age of 3. For a number of years, that program has served CalWORKs families exclusively, but with an infusion of new state funding, this month we expanded the diaper bank to also serving CalFresh households who have young children. So that significantly expands the number of families who are eligible for that really valuable service in San Francisco. Diapers can cost $80 to $100 a month and are not covered by food stamp benefits or by WIC benefits. And so this is a real added value for low-income families who are struggling to meet costs. We did get a lot of coverage thanks to our great communications team. The story was picked up on KQED, Univision, Spanish radio, Chinese television, and SF Gate. So that was some exciting news this month. Quick update on the expansion of CalFresh benefits to older adults and persons with disability on SSI. We have now enrolled approximately half of SSI recipients in San Francisco, approaching 20,000 individuals, which exceeds the average statewide, and we'll be continuing to push on outreach to that population. In the Welfare to Work Services Division, a couple of updates. Earlier this month, the Jobs Now program participated in the 5-year celebration of the passage of the Fair Chance Ordinance, which is a local ordinance that prohibits employers from asking about criminal background before a conditional offer of employment is made. So it's been 5 years since we adopted that, and in celebration there was a rally at City Hall and then a job fair at the Twitter building on Market Street. And so we helped to promote that job fair, and we were on hand to help connect clients to our Job Now services. Another area of partnership for Jobs Now, we are partnering with the Downtown Streets Initiative, which is a local nonprofit that works with homeless single adults. You might see them pushing brooms in different areas wearing their Downtown Streets t-shirts. We are partnering with Downtown Streets and the Department of Public Works to help connect eligible homeless participants to PST, Public Service Trainee positions, at the Department of Public Works so that they have an entree to city employment and other forms of permanent employment. We are also partnering with the Office of Civic Engagement and Immigrant Affairs, which is the lead city agency preparing for the 2020 census. I think we've updated you, commissioners, on the fact that the census will look quite different this time than it did a decade ago. Most of the census forms will be filled out online, which is a hurdle to participation for many of our low-income residents who experience the digital divide and don't have easy access to computers to be able to fill out the census. So we will be partnering with OSEA, inviting them to come to our community-based partner meetings in the month of December to provide a little bit of education about the census and to let our community partners know how they can help. So, for example, we have many community partners who provide employment service training, and they do things like provide basic computer literacy classes. So our hope is that when they're working with clients on computer literacy, one of the exercises in the classroom might be helping them to fill out the census. We're also helping to recruit census outreach workers and census takers, primarily focusing on the southeast sector of the city so that they can do outreach and education in their community.
With regard to the census, there'll be jobs available.
Yes.
Participating in helping some of our people get jobs.
Yes, we are doing that, Commissioner. So there are sort of two types of jobs that we're focusing on. There are official Census Bureau jobs where they're hiring enumerators. The requirements to get those positions are a little bit elevated. They may not be within reach for all of our clients, but for those who might be eligible, we are helping to recruit for those jobs. There are also some locally funded community outreach positions that we are directing our clients to. With regard to the CalWORKs funding, just a quick update on our housing support program, which rapidly rehouses homeless CalWORKs families. We received an increased state allocation of funding this year, taking our funding for that program from $4.8 million up to $6.5 million. With that new funding, we will be able to newly house 110 families this year, in addition to sustaining rent subsidies for the 115 families who have already been housed. With that new funding, we have also reached out to engage a new partner in delivering those rapid rehousing services. We have been working for a number of years with Hamilton Family Services, but we are now also partnering with Catholic Charities. So we're excited to have them on board as a partner in this work. And finally, with regard to the County Adult Assistance Program, CAP, as you know, a big focus for CAP in the last couple of years has really been improving their business processes to make for a more customer-friendly program. And one of the ways that we did that, about 5 months ago, we launched the ability to apply for CAP services online. That is now fully implemented. We are getting about 50 to 60 applications online now. Our staff have all been trained in how to process those applications. We have a link to the online portal on our website and a step-by-step guide for clients to assist them to apply online. In addition to that, the CAP program has revamped its intake process. So rather than asking applicants to fill out a big paper packet and bring that to us to process, people can now come, sit down. We are able to pool information from our CalFresh and Medi-Cal programs out of our data system and populate a CAP application for them. And then we just need to ask a few supplemental questions, which we do right there in person, face-to-face, in order to complete the application process. So slowly but surely, we are modernizing our processes and making access easier for those who need our services. That's all for economic support and self-sufficiency. In the realm of family and children's services, the first thing I want to speak to, commissioners, is an article that you may have seen in the Chronicle earlier this week regarding allegations of sexual abuse at the Edgewood Center for Children and Families. I'm looking for my notes, which I don't seem to have printed. At any rate, you know that we have relied on Edgewood for many years now to provide psychiatric and behavioral health services to many of our youth and children in foster care. So has the Department of Public Health. So obviously these allegations are of a grave concern to us. Edgewood is licensed by the State Department of Social Services. And in August, the state released investigatory findings that revealed these allegations. I want to just assure you, commissioners, that in August, when that report was released, we did respond immediately to halt all referrals to Edgewood and to begin reassigning children and youth to different service providers, as did the Department of Public Health. There is a DA investigation ongoing right now, and we are working in close partnership with the Department of Public Health and Edgewood to address the deficiencies that were undercovered by the state investigation. Are there any questions about that, commissioners? Okay.
What's the impact of the number of young people and families we've had to transfer or move within our system?
I'm going to invite Joan Miller, our Deputy for Family and Children's Services, to answer that.
Good morning.
At the time that we halted all placements in August, we had three children there, so we had to move three children. And we would, is this backwards? So we had three children there. The impact, it's hard to say moving forward in terms of placement. We only use Edgewood for our short-term residential treatment program placement. And it's not an automatic that any child we had that needed that tight level of placement would go there. They would have to approve it, and they often would not, depending on what the child's needs were. So the impact was to three kids. One of them was going home, one of them was going to a relative, and another one we moved to another placement. So that's, sure, is that it?
Thank you, Joe. In much more upbeat news, we had our Adoption Day event on November 8th at 400 McAllister. It was a great success. Thank you, Commissioner Kahn, for attending that event. Six children were adopted at that event after eating lots of good food and participating in a celebratory ceremony. So that was a really fun, fun event. Closing up with Family and Children's Services, just a brief update to let you know that the Child Protection Center closed this month. Of course, that has been in planning for a very long time. The closure of the CPC was really meant to stay in line with legislative changes related to congregate care reform and to make sure that every child and youth in our foster care system can be placed with a family rather than in an institution. Now youth who are coming into care will either go to a family with our alternative family services partner or with Seneca for youth who have more acute needs. We have been piloting this new system for several months now, and while there are always bumps along the road in a new transition like this, for the most part, things have gone very well, and so we're pleased to report out on that. I think that is all for my local port. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, commissioners.
I would just like to make a comment on the Adoption Day celebration that I attended. I can tell you that it was heartwarming. The families that were there, the excitement that was there, the kids that were there, it was somewhat overwhelming to me, and I'm glad I was able to participate. I'm an adopted father myself, and I know how important it is. So to all of you that are involved in the community, and to our agency, that was a great event, and I so much appreciated being there. Moving on to item 5 is our presentation of the November 2019 Employees of the Month. And this month, we're really fortunate that there are about 33 people being honored, which I'm not going to begin to even attempt to list everyone, but I've eyeballed everyone and I've said hello earlier, so I thank you. But let me just read this so that everybody up here is aware of, everybody in the audience is aware of what you do. We're pleased to honor the placement and the CPC units within Family and Children's Services as our November 2019 Employees of the Month. They are receiving... They are receiving this award for their critical role in shepherding one of the most significant changes in our child welfare division in many years, transforming emergency placement to a more family-centered model in alignment with California's continuum of care reform. This transition included the closure of Child Protective Center, otherwise known as the CPC, which had operated for decades as the initial facility children came to as they entered foster care. CPC and placement staff worked closely with internal and external partners, including the San Francisco Human Service Agency Program, data and policy staff, Department of Public Health, nursing and clinical staff, Alternative Family Services, and Seneca Family of Agencies to develop and implement new processes for children entering care. Over the last 6 months, the placement and CPC units have been exceptional in their dedication and flexibility as Family and Children's Services has tested out these new procedures, coordinating with child welfare and provider staff to directly place children in a foster care placement rather than first coming through the CPC. This reduces the number of transitions children experience during a time of crisis and allows for more immediate stabilization and support in a family setting or appropriate placement. This has been a challenging process requiring all hands on deck, frequent communication every day at all hours in both direct work with specific children as well as participation in the intensive planning efforts this kind of change demands. The CPC closed this week, and we are now placing every child directly into a foster home or placement facility. The employees of the CPC and placement units have been instrumental in this endeavor, demonstrating incredible teamwork, capability, and leadership throughout the transition. Additionally, the CPC staff has been deployed to new units, which will continue to support placement staff and the division. We would like to thank these staff members for their outstanding endurance, willingness, and assistance at a time of exceptional change. Ms. Simmons, would you like to add to these comments?
Well, I did just want to pass along that Trent was regretful that he couldn't be here today to thank you all for your hard work and to congratulate you on this well-deserved reward. He would normally say more than that, but I'm going to turn the mic over to Joan to say a few words of thanks as well.
I just want to say thank you. It was impossible, of course, to single out one person between CPC and placement. Is this on? And I can't thank you enough. You know, for people who aren't, you know, they've heard CPC over the decades that we've had it. What it really means is these are the folks that were, you know, on the ground floor at 2 a.m. when, you know, the police department called and said they had a child. Or the hospital called and said they had a child. That takes some incredible dedication, even if you're being paid for it, to do that. And to make sure that when kids came to us, whatever hour of the day or night, they were cared for. Of course, placement, you know, we put incredible pressures on placement to find placements for these children because they were only supposed to be there 23 hours and 59 minutes. It, you know, we weren't always successful, but not because of placement, but because of the way the system is. So I can't thank you enough for providing whatever hope, consolation, support that you gave not only to the children but to the community. CCR is the most significant thing that we have experienced in child welfare in easily 20 years. Part of that for San Francisco City and County was closing our CPC. And that has been incredibly significant. As you all know, there have been a lot of feelings around it. And I want to thank you for that support and for being there every step of the way. It's well deserved. Thank you.
I'm Liz Crudo, Acting Program Director, and I think we all know it takes a village, and this is a really big village. There's a lot of people on this list today, so I'm just going to read the names out and acknowledge you. And we have some certificates that we'll pass out after this presentation today. So the employees being honored are Tracy Logan, Brian Monsayak, Sandra Oriole, Shatara Winston, Kara Tuasosopo, did I get that right? Ninhua Cheng, Jessica Hooker, Marty Jaquinto, Tamisha Mouton, Veronica Rostro. Tamisha, Marty, and Veronica were our three soups involved with this effort. Melody Aquino, Enrique Sampson, Erica Perry, Kevin Liu, Karima Arnold, Arthur Lopez, Evelyn Lal, Eileen Rizzo, Karen Smith, Cheryl Chan, Armand Booth, Jocelyn Green, Kiana Henderson, Bianca Craig, Jewel Barrett, Johnny Dunn, Yuri Taylor, Viviana Maldonado, Monica Salazar, Sparkle Wilson, Monique Dobbs, Kayla Gray, and Shirley Jackson. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me? Yeah. On behalf of myself, my co-supervisor, Veronica, my co-supervisor in placement, Tamisha Mouton, and the Child Protection Center and the placement staff, we just want to thank our management team for nominating us, as well as our distinguished panel of the commissioners for presenting us this prestigious award. Thank you very much. I started the Child Protection Center 26 years ago. I was just fresh out of Cal Berkeley. It was my first real city and county job. And it was a tough first week there. I remember starting my day with WAW, with placement, and John Sudakawa. We started the same day. And we worked together there, working with the kids, taking them through medical clearances and getting them the placement. And after 26 years of just the hard work and dedication, as well as the teamwork from not only management, but from our protective service workers and our collateral contacts with SFPD and public health. It really has been a team effort these last 26 years. The last 4 years have been really, really challenging for us. But I must say that, you know, that we will continue in this process with transitioning our youth safely and with the utmost respect and dignity into emergency foster care as the best we can. And we're going to continue that even in our new roles at Third Street. I just want to thank everybody. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you once again. Item 7 on our agenda is the SIP System Improvement Plan, calling on Liz Crudo.
Yeah.
Well, item 6, yes. I'm sorry.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Liz Crudo, Acting Program Director.
Liz,
Program
the other
Director for Family and Children's Services.
Liz, can you use that other microphone?
This
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
Is that better?
When you turn it on, it will be. Now it's
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm here to present on our system improvement plan for 2019-2024. The five-year system improvement plan is part of a mandated outcome improvement planning process that's required by the state and something that all counties do. And this allows us as a county, in partnership with juvenile probation, to take a step back and look at our outcomes designated for child welfare, things like how many children are coming into care, how many children are being maltreated and then having a substantiation within a year, how many children are reentering foster care, when they leave foster care, where are they going? We take a step back and we look at all these designated outcomes and make a determination about one or two that we want to focus on for improvement over the next 5 years. So that's what this planning process is. And the two outcomes that we are focusing on for this next five-year plan are timely permanency within 12 months. So within 12 months of a child entering foster care, we want to see improvement in reunification, adoption, or legal guardianship. And juvenile probation is also focusing on this particular outcome. And secondly, for child welfare, we want to look at reentries into foster care. That's something that we've struggled with for a long time. We've made periodic improvements, but they've been tough to sustain. So if children coming into foster care, how many are going, when they reunify, how many are coming back into foster care within 12 months? So those are our two focused outcomes in this current SIP. And it's a pretty extensive planning process. We look at prevention through intervention through aftercare. So I know you all got a very robust report. Some of the description and documents in that report refer to prevention funding from Office of Child Abuse Prevention. That's to help with our upfront prevention efforts, as well as the intervention efforts. In January this year, we did our peer review where we invite counties who did well in timely permanency to come and meet with our staff and look at specific cases and ways that we might glean information from them about their practices that we might want to use to make some improvements. And then we had a series of focus groups beginning of the year. I think there were 13 looking or discussing with staff, with partners, internal and external partners, about ways that they thought that we might make improvements. That also included at our division meeting in March, using that opportunity to get input from staff about how we could make changes in these particular measures. We wrote a very extensive report, county self-assessment report, that was submitted to the state in May. And then we had a wrap-up stakeholder meeting with staff and partners in June where we presented our findings and gathered feedback from them about ways that we could make improvements in reentries and timely permanency. So that all led to the particular strategies that are identified in the system improvement plan, intensifying prevention by strengthening the family network and support, specifically the natural family network. So that when we pull out, families still have supports that can work with them after our division involvement. Expanded capacity to provide trauma-informed and attachment-based foster care to children and families. Strengthening concurrent planning throughout the life of a case. So again, our priority is to get children home, but if they can't go home, we want to make sure that they have legal permanency with adoption or legal guardianship. And then leveraging our implementation planning efforts around implementing the core practice model and addressing the organizational change priorities that came out of our organizational change initiative that we've been doing the last couple of years. And I think you've heard about some of those efforts previously in other meetings here. So those are the big overarching strategies. The particular activities to achieve those strategies include prevention. We've been working with the Comptroller's Office looking at resource mapping, And actually that's been in partnership with DPH and First Five and our Child Abuse Prevention Center, Safe and Sound, looking at what services and interventions families have access to before they touch our system and mapping that out for the county. And also our mobile response expansion that we recently entered into a contract with Seneca, so that children in home or in foster family settings, the families can contact and ask for assistance at a time of crisis, as they define the crisis. Placement efforts, our emergency placement process that you've just heard about that was recognized today, so children going directly into placement settings rather than going through the CPC, and then also efforts around resource family recruitment and retention. Family-focused planning and engagement using our safety organized practice case consultation model, our child and family team meetings, partner engagement with differential response, and offering bias training this year as part of our activities identified. And then staff development and retention. We did a number of staff interviews to identify improvements. The last couple of years we've had more turnover than usual, and so those staff interviews helped us identify ways that we can minimize that, including supporting the relationship between supervisor and supervisee. And because of that, we are in the process of developing a supervisory framework so that supervision is more consistent across our division. And then we have the Chapin Hall study that's looking at basically doing a task analysis of staff to identify workload and reasonable caseload expectations. And then analysis and evaluation. We are one of seven counties that will be piloting analysis process around our child and family team meetings and the integration of the CANS Child and Adolescent Strengths and Needs Assessment Tool, and how we're using that mental health tool in the CANS and the child and family team meetings discussion. We've also done some recent analysis around our red teams, and then looking at timely permanency, P1, timely permanency, and doing a case file review so that we can really drill down into a specific group of cases and see what worked and what didn't in those cases to further inform our planning efforts. So that's just a summary of the action steps for the next 5 years. This report was submitted to the state. We're waiting to hear back from them. Typically, there's a little bit of back and forth clarifying our action plan, but I don't expect it to change too much, hopefully. So just wanted to present this to you and get your approval for our proposal at this point. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Can I have a motion for approval?
I think Mr. McCray has a question.
I'm sorry. Could you put the four strategies back up one more time?
Sure. So we have those four strategies, and then we have, you know, different action steps under each one. And there's that matrix in the document, and that really breaks that down. Yeah. So the activities that I, you know, in the next slide, that all folds under these.
Can I ask for a motion for approval of the plan? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Thank you.
So moved. Thank you. Item 7 on the agenda is our consent calendar. Does anyone want to remove an item for individual discussion? All in favor? So moved. Item 8, we're moving on to commission business, item 8. And I'm calling on Jason. This is requesting authorization to modify the existing grant agreement with the Children Council of San Francisco.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Noel. I'm Jason Holta, senior analyst with the Office of Early Care and Education. I'm going to combine the Children's Council and Wu Yi, since it's combined in the commission memo. We're asking the commission's approval to modify an existing grant agreement with Children's Council of San Francisco and WUI's Children's Services for an additional amount of $197,256,773, as well as an authorization to extend these agreements to include fiscal years 4 and 5. We are currently in year 3 of the grant term. This would create a 5-year total grant amount of $451,862,532 for both agencies to provide subsidy administration, fiscal intermediary, and child care resource and referral services, or what we call ECE integrated services, or early care and education integrated services. Children's Council and WE are longtime grantees of the Human Services Agency. Both organizations administer all of our local and state-funded child care subsidies. Approximately 90% of the funding in these grants are passed through, providing our families access to subsidized early education subsidies and services. This grant provides fully funded enrollments as well as enhancements to state and federal subsidy rates to ensure our early education programs receive compensation commensurate with the local market rate, and more importantly, allows our families access to quality early education services. In total, both agencies administer a combination of subsidized childcare, case management, fiscal intermediary, and resource and referral services to over 7,800 children. As a result of our local funding strategies and strong mayoral and board support for ECE services, the number of children receiving locally funded vouchers and anchored spaces has more than tripled since fiscal year 17. Additionally, San Francisco families no longer lose their child care subsidy simply because their parent has lost their job or discontinued school or training. Our system now prioritizes the child's developmental need over simply being a work support and ensures children who enter our subsidy system remain subsidized until they reach kindergarten, regardless of the parent's activities. The grant augmentation that we are requesting the Commission's approval ensures that we can fund local rate increases, costs of doing business adjustments, ensure adequate system staffing, much of this which was unforeseen at the outset of this grant agreement, and entire citywide redesign of our early education financing. It also extends the grant term for an additional 2 years and allows us to administer $3 million and Board of Supervisors discretionary funding received this fiscal year specifically to fund vouchers and assist in getting more children off the subsidy wait list. And finally, distribute $32.9 million in ERAF funds to approximately 2,200 teachers that make up our ECE workforce, or our early care and education workforce. These funds are issued as biannual stipends designed to help mitigate the teacher recruitment and retention crisis in San Francisco. These services were competitively bid through an RFP in fiscal year 2017, and both agencies were selected through this competitive process. I'm joined by my colleagues from Children's Council and WU Yi, and we're happy to answer any questions. Approximately 3,000. It varies between 2 and 3.
Okay, I think what we need to do is vote on each item separately.
I have a question.
Go right ahead.
Who is running the Children's Council now?
It is Gina Frommer, formerly from the YMCA.
Okay, voting on item A, the Children's Council of San Francisco. Can I have a motion for approval? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. And item B, the Wei Yi Children's Services. Can I ask for a motion for approval?
Thank
all in
you,
favor?
Commissioner.
So moved. Sorry.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment? There are no comments from the public at this time. Our meeting is adjourned. Liz.
Thank you.